Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Let's get started. We're having a work session on our 2015 legislative agenda, 6 months and counting, well, 7 months. Martha and her team are going to walk us through some background on where things are lining up for the next session. We have some issues left from last session where we had them on our agenda. We got nowhere, like studded tires, and we may want to put them back on our agenda again. We have other issues that are new. I think I will stop there and let you take it away.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of council. For the record, Martha Pellegrino, Director of the Office of Government Relations. Let me start by just introducing my team here today. To my right is Dan Eisenbeiss, the Manager of State Government Relations. We have Elizabeth Edwards as an associate with our state team, and Andy Smith, Senior Associate of Government Relations. So this comprises your state legislative team, and we're really thrilled to be here today to get an early look for the first time. And per the mayor's request, we're having this discussion much earlier than we ever have. So I think today we're looking for some high-level guidance from you all and to give us a sense of where we should be spending our time in the next few months in vetting and honing in on some of these issues to bring back to you in the fall. So what I will say is I'm going to cover just a couple of process issues just to give you a little bit of framework for where we are and where we're going. And just a bit of terminology. We have instructed the bureaus to think about submitting legislative issues in one of three categories. Either priorities, which are the top line items for the city, pretty self-explanatory. Initiatives, which are the bills where the city of Portland will take the lead and advance through the legislature. And then policy positions, where it's a much larger group of issues where the city of Portland will take a position and a role and have a role, but not necessarily be the lead in that advocacy effort. So turning to the legislative calendar and the city's process, we have asked bureaus and offices of the city to submit their ideas for legislative consideration by the 3rd of July, and those are just the priorities and initiatives, so the bills where the city will be the lead. And then they have until August 5th to submit all the other issues that they would like to be considered. One of the reasons we do this so early is because the legislative timelines themselves are quite early, and September 22nd is when the pre-session filing deadline is at the state legislature, and those are deadlines imposed by Senate and House leadership. We will be conducting community outreach from September all the way through December, culminating in an advocacy 101 session, which we've had really great success, and I think we can build on some of the successes we have had there. And we'll plan to come back to you in November, December in a work session where we'll bring you a vetted agenda. And then January, aim to do another breakfast with the legislative delegation. Again, gives you an opportunity to make your legislative asks of them. And then the legislature will get organized and sort of start dropping bills in January, but they'll officially convene on the 2nd of February. So at this point, I would like to turn things over to Dan Eisenbeiss to give us a little bit of a look back of the sort of highlights and challenges of the last two sessions. Dan.
So before we turn to looking at the lay of the land for the upcoming 2015 session, just wanted to review some of the highlights and unfinished business from 2013 and 2014. Thankfully, with your leadership and direct advocacy, both at the legislature and rallying support, from your colleagues in other communities, the list of successes is much longer than the list of unfinished business. And on your slide there, the unfinished business is in black italics. For 2013, just to call out a few items, the city advocated for funding for K-12 education, and the legislature stepped up and delivered a record level of funding for K-12, $6.75 billion. It's a great success. And on mental health funding and public safety budgeting, they increased funding for mental health by 18.4%. And then in the area of affordable housing and access to housing, we saw successes both with a couple city initiatives to extend a tax credit and to clarify the tax-exempt status of city-owned property, as well as worked with others to help pass legislation to prevent discrimination based on Section 8 vouchers. Notably, in the area of unfinished business, property tax reform is something that we worked with the League of Oregon Cities to advocate. That did not move forward in 2013. And then gun safety, an issue that we worked again on in 2014, did not move forward in 2013. Turning to 2014, advocating for funding for emergency housing and homeless assistance was an area where we were very lucky to have success in working with members of the Housing Alliance and others to restore funding for those state programs to pre-recession levels. Gun safety, there was a big push to pass legislation to close the state loophole on background checks. Unfortunately, that was not successful. But we were able to close the 911 tax loophole on prepaid cell phones and voice over internet protocol. That is something that will provide a direct revenue benefit to the city of Portland and other 911 call centers around the state. The estimates are anywhere from low to high six figures annually for the city of Portland, but we do know that it's a growing share of the market, and strategically it was very important to get that done. And then the legislature made a transformative investment in helping to build the OHSU Cancer Research Institute to the tune of $200 million. Turning to the next slide, there were a number of other major issues that we worked on that were not part of the city's agenda in 2014, some of which may come up again in 2015. One issue where there was success is the legislature passed a bill to instruct PERS to coordinate with local government employers to provide information on pension liabilities to comply with federal accounting standards. That was something that was very important from a nuts and bolts perspective. We did play defense on some items. There was a proposal that would have significantly restricted city authority to form and implement local improvement districts. That came in response to concern over a particular case in the city of Kaiser that was eventually settled out of court. There was pending litigation, but it is something that could come up again in 2015. There was also,
note for Martha's benefit that my favorite quote of the World Cup was the coach who said he put 10 plus 5 back on defense. And the guy said, well, 10 plus 5 is only 11 on team. He goes, no, 10 defenders plus 5 Saints.
Another issue that came up that did not go through this last session would have extended third-party liability in certain wrongful death cases. Could have been a very significant liability for the city. There were a number of proposals that would have adversely affected the city's ability to conduct law enforcement investigations that did not move forward in the short session. And then there was a bill to address procurement with Cover Oregon that we successfully advocated a clarifying amendment to make clear that it did not apply to local governments. And then there were successes as well, including expansion of the Future Connect program to other pilot programs around the state with state investment, as well as $2.5 million of state investment for housing preservation. And then the legislature moved to implement the allocation of $10 million from the special session in the fall for mental health housing purposes. So with that, I will hand things over to Elizabeth to discuss the lay of the land moving forward.
So one thing that we are obviously keeping in mind while looking forward to 2015 is the composition of the legislature. In 2013 and 2014, the Democrats held a slight majority in the Senate and a fairly robust majority in the House. Looking forward to the November election, on the Senate side, one or two seats shifting could make a huge impact with regard to what legislation can and does get passed. We're watching in particular two races, one out of the Medford-Ashland area and another out of the Albany-Corvallis area. On the House side, it's a little bit murkier. We anticipate that Democrats will keep their majority, but we're not quite clear on numbers. There are at least five races that we're watching. One thing that we do know based on the primary that just occurred is that the House Republican caucus is looking more conservative. When two candidates were running against each other in the Republican primary, more often than not, the more conservative candidate won. So keeping that in mind, it should be a very interesting fall. And
what's the state Senate race in Albany?
That's former Representative Sarah Gelser running against the incumbent Betsy Close, Senator Betsy Close. Also, sort of framing issues in November, those ballot initiatives will that make the ballot will in a large way frame the discussion, depending on what moves forward and what doesn't. We're looking at recreational marijuana potentially moving forward, labeling of GMO products, unified or open primaries. Those are all things that could impact discussions in 2015. It's also important to keep in mind that 2015 is a budgeting year. The economy in Oregon is improving. Portland is at pre-recession levels, and statewide job growth is currently at its strongest pace since 2006. In at least 80% of counties around Oregon, they saw improvement in job growth. So this is something where across the state we're seeing benefits. The housing market also regaining its footing is having a huge impact. And at the most recent state budget revenue forecast, the state economists projected that in the 2015-2017 biennium, we'll see about an 11.5% increase in our general revenue fund. Unfortunately, much of that increase will get rolled up in costs that have already been incurred. Namely, full-time kindergarten will take a large chunk of that additional bump in revenue. That said, we'll have a much better idea of what the revenue outlook will be come this fall. So having laid some of that groundwork, I'm going to pass it to Andy Smith to talk about our interim efforts in 2014 and the opportunities and challenges in 2015.
Thanks, Elizabeth. So looking forward to the 2015 session, our office has been actively tracking and participating in several interim work groups. The Oregon Transportation Forum, at the direction of the governor, has been meeting to figure out potential funding scenarios for the 2015 session and beyond. Representative Reardon and Representative Parrish are co-chairing a work group on inclusionary housing policies to come up with potentially a package of policies to bring to the 2015 legislature. Boley has convened a work group around the veterans' preference, looking at ways to clarify the application of the statute to make it more workable and easier to deal with for public employers across the state. The Department of Environmental Quality has convened a work group on waste prevention, recovery, and recycling. They are looking at ways to address potential increases and expansions of the tipping fee. Representative Tomei has been leading a conversation around bringing e-cigarettes under state regulation. So we've been tracking and participating in that one. And then a coalition of private, public, and nonprofit partners have been meeting to look at options for brownfield redevelopment into the future.
You've got both sick leave and minimum wage listed on the next page, and some of our friends who are advocates for the minimum wage issue are here. Is there not an interim committee that's looking at minimum wage?
So at this point, there's no organized discussion, but there are definitely stakeholders who are assessing options about what to do and how to move it forward. So I can just start with that and earn sick leave on the next page as potential opportunities in 2015. So on the minimum wage front, I think legislators would like to look at this as a statewide approach. And they're looking at potentially increasing the actual dollar amount of the minimum wage and also looking at the formula calculation of the minimum wage and seeing if there's adjustments that can be made on that front. I don't think that they have any specific proposal that's fully cooked and ready to move forward, but there is a lot of interest among stakeholders and I think leadership on addressing income inequality issues in the next session. So the minimum wage is one example, and then taking earned sick leave statewide would be another item of interest.
What about lifting the local preemption on cities setting minimum wages?
So from what we're hearing at this point, I think that the interest is taking a statewide approach. So I think that legislators would prefer to look at ways to raise the dollar amount or look at the calculation of the formula for all across the state rather than allowing cities on a case-by-case basis to raise the minimum wage within their own jurisdictions.
Would lifting the local preemption be a perhaps fallback if the legislators, or at least our friends who want to see a statewide increase in minimum wage, don't feel they're going to be able to have the votes? Because I know lifting a local preemption can resonate more on a bipartisan basis than necessarily lifting the minimum wage.
I mean, I think it's certainly possible, and we'll continue to track the discussion to see if, as things move along, to see if the interest at the legislature isn't enough to move a statewide approach forward. I think that certainly people will be talking about whether an option would be to simply lift the preemption and let cities or counties go at it on their own. But at this point, what we're hearing is that the preference is to look statewide first.
Shift gears on you a little bit, and that is, what kind of ideas are they talking about with respect to brownfield redevelopment?
I'll let Dan take that one.
So the coalition that's meeting includes public sector entities such as the City of Portland, Port of Portland, Metro, League of Oregon Cities, Association of Oregon Counties, a number of business associations, and some organizations from the nonprofit community, as well as state agencies. They're looking at both funding opportunities, so state investments to promote cleanup and redevelopment of brownfields.
So tax incentives, maybe.
Potentially tax incentives or potentially recapitalization of the Brownfield Redevelopment Fund, which is administered by Business Oregon. And we anticipate that the agency will be requesting recapitalization of that fund as part of their budget request to the governor.
Is Lou Frederick in the lead at the committee level?
Representative Frederick is very much in the loop about these conversations. The conversations have been primarily down in the weeds amongst the stakeholder group in terms of identifying and fleshing out potential concepts. So the coalition is also looking at potential opportunities on the regulatory side of things to try to streamline efforts and promote redevelopment.
What's the status of the earned sick leave after there was a work group after 2013, right?
There was, the work group declined to bring anything forward in 2014. I think that everybody's looking forward to November to see what the composition of the legislature is going to look like so they can make an assessment on what to move forward or what not to move forward. So at this point, there's no, much like the minimum wage, there's no organized conversation, but the stakeholders who would be the lead in moving those things forward are certainly thinking about how they want to approach it.
So who are the leaders on the minimum wage, would you guess?
Sure. So I think that that for income inequalities generally, I think there's interest among in the Speaker's office and among the Democratic caucuses generally to address income inequality issues. On the stakeholder side, AFL-CIO would be the one who's, I would say, at this point is in the lead on thinking about how to move forward on both the minimum wage and earned sick leave.
I have a spectacularly naive question, which is, when you try to override specific preemptions, you run into specific interest groups. Has there ever been an effort in the past to just package as many as people can think of together and say, you should just let cities do whatever the state does, like a cities gone wild preemption measure?
I can't wait to take that one. As far as I know, we've never had an omnibus preemptions bill, but I love that idea. And I do think a few sessions ago, 2009 in particular, when the state budget started to contract, there was a much more robust conversation about giving cities more authority and giving local leaders more authority to do the work that local leaders want to do, because the state wasn't in a financial position to fund services and infrastructure in the way they'd like. So not to my knowledge, but would love the idea. I think the profile of preemptions has increased in the last few years. And I think there is a greater understanding with our legislative delegation that there are certain situations where it does make sense for city leaders to lead, and giving city leaders the authority to do that. On some of the discussions that have been happening, the trade-off has been we don't want to leave other people behind, even if they're not in a certain city's borders. We want to make sure in some of these discussions we're not leaving Oregonians behind. So I think that's where the state legislature is really trying to start their push. But again, this is all very early. We've got a little bit of, we could have brought a magic eight ball up here today and said, and shake it and say on some of these things, you know, too early to tell, ask again later. That's really the true sense of what the landscape is, because, you know, we're taking the time to think about these things now so we can get out ahead of some of these issues. But the truth is some of these strategy conversations are very much at their early stages. So this is why we're really glad to have a conversation.
Who is city staff that's following the inclusionary housing debate?
Since Andy has been attending some of those meetings, I'm different to him.
So I've been attending the meetings and tracking them, and also Housing Bureau has been participating in them, both doing a presentation on the types of tools we use locally to incentivize the development of affordable housing, and then they have staff in the room also tracking the discussion.
Good. Thank you.
So
I was going to say, so let's talk guns.
Okay. So gun safety, I mean, you know, given the recent tragedies in our community and all across the country, there's, you know, renewed interest and discussion amongst legislators about bringing forward gun safety legislation in the next legislative session. I don't think we know specifically what's going to be on the table yet, but I think it's reasonable to anticipate that many of the same proposals that we've seen in previous sessions, closing the loophole on background checks and other proposals of the like, are likely to make an appearance in the next legislative session.
Yeah, I haven't talked yet with Senator Burdick. We just exchanged messages a couple weeks ago, but obviously she's
Absolutely.
I assume Senator Burdick is going to remain key to that effort in the Senate.
And I will say we have our leaders who have been longstanding champions of smart regulation, and Senator Burdick has been the longest champion of that. What we've seen in the last two sessions is we've had some new leaders step up, which is where I think there's actually a lot of potential. Senator Prezonsky was actually the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, was the sponsor of the background checks bill, and held the hearing in his committee. So I think there's some forward progress going on there. Since the tragedy at Reynolds High School, I've also been seeing some of our House members, Representative Kenny Geyer, is convening a small group to talk with some of her colleagues about what are some other options where there can be some smart and common sense concepts being advanced. So my sense is going into 2015, there will be opportunities to try to expand the discussion and also to expand the champions who have been leading the effort.
So moving on to opportunities around e-cigarettes, I mentioned the work group that we've been tracking, and they're really focused on regulating them in a public health kind of way. But the opportunity, I think, is that there is interest amongst other legislators to include e-cigarettes in the tobacco tax formula, much like other nicotine products are taxed. So that could mean an increase in the shared revenues that local governments receive as a result. I'll skip over earned sick leave and minimum wage, since we've covered that, to legal aid funding. As you all remember, there was a bill in the last legislative session that would have redirected unclaimed class action damages and directed it to legal aid and instead of back to the defendants. That bill failed very narrowly in the final days of the legislative session, and I think that legislators are going to be very interested in bringing that proposal back for the 2015 legislative session.
And probably goes without saying that that's a key issue in which a Senator Gelser would make a difference.
Yeah, I think like much like some of these other items on the list, the elections are certainly going to be determinative of what moves forward, and I would put that in that camp.
You know, one of the
one of the things people might be saying is, why is the city of Portland interested in this particular issue? We don't provide the service. It's a statewide issue. It's legal services. I think the short answer is, notwithstanding the extraordinary legal aid program in the state and the generous support of the private bar to supplement it, still, I think we're, what is it, Steve? 1 in 5 eligible low-income people gets the legal services they need. We're still at a ratio that's pretty modest.
I don't actually know the number, but
and that means people not getting help accessing a federal benefit, not getting help dealing with an eviction, not getting help with a family crisis or what have you. So the city has a great interest in making sure people have access to legal services, and the federal legal service program in our state is first rate. So even though this in this new round there's the possibility that we won't be able to capture some of the funds on some settlements in class action cases that could have been captured if it had been passed last time, it still is new money to fund legal services. So I hope this remains a city priority.
Commissioner Fisher, it's my impression that legal aid lawyers spend a bunch of time on housing-related issues. So I actually think that we could see this as sort of part of a housing agenda.
Well, and in fact, we have historically funded things like helping people with Clean Slate, which clears up minor criminal stuff so they can rent. We've helped people with accessing low-income tax credits so they have funds to cover basic necessities. We've helped people. We've funded programs that help people get SSI benefits, which then has lots of dividends, including getting people a lump sum and the health care they need, but also reimbursing local providers. So I view this as the same in the same category. I agree with you.
Okay, so moving on to education funding, and before I start, I just want to mention that I've skipped over some of the bullets intentionally. Dan's going to come back through at the end after I'm done and hit those bullets that I skipped over. He's a little more spend a little more time on some of those issues. So education funding, that is going to be the focus of the state budget discussions, as it usually is. I think of note is that there is increased interest among many legislators on making meaningful investments in higher education, and that you know, we always hear that you know, higher education is important from the legislature, but I think this time there's some acute interest in seeing some much more meaningful investments on that side. So the K-12 budget is going to continue to be a major issue, and then I think we're also going to see a push on higher education.
How about pre-K? Any movement?
Yeah, I know that the speaker is one of her priorities, early learning. So I think that the education budget from pre-K through higher education is going to be front and center this time. And then moving on to marijuana, and you know, I think that there are opportunities with marijuana should the voters choose to legalize it in November. The measure that looks like it's moving forward, Initiative 53, has a preemption on local taxation. The shared revenue formula that it sets out in it appears to be relatively low for cities and counties, and the way recreational outlets would be licensed is very much like alcohol outlets are licensed. So I think that there's opportunities on all three of those areas, potentially looking at a lift of the preemption, a local taxation, perhaps more local authority on the licensing side. So those are the types of things that we would be looking at as opportunities with marijuana should the voters choose to legalize it in November.
One item I don't see on your list, and that's red light and speed cameras.
So what these potential opportunities are, it's by no means a list of things that we think are going to come front and center. The reason it's not on here is because, again, we haven't yet received sort of the concept papers from the bureaus. And so those are things, when we receive those are issues that we'll start working on and vetting. But we tried to narrow down this list into pretty broad brushstrokes of the things we know are actually currently coming.
So. Just to preview some of the things that I know will be coming to you from PBOT, one will be authorization to use unmanned speed cameras. Another will be something on studded tires. And actually, I found at least one legislator who said that he'd be willing to introduce this, that would at least one option would be to authorize counties to impose taxes or bans on studded tires. To make that work, you'd have to have a coalition of metro counties doing it. So we'd have to talk to, like, you know, Multnomah and Clackamas and Washington. But even if people in Baker County are still allowed to have all the studded tires they want and to drive through Portland on them, there's not that many of them. So that's an option. I've actually mentioned that to the speaker a few weeks ago as well when we were going to a superhero movie. And she didn't dismiss the idea out of hand. Another thing that will be on our list is trying to reform the way the state allows us to reduce speed limits, to have a simpler process for us to request the ability to reduce speed limits. That's a rather technical one. That's something actually that folks at ODOT suggested that they might be receptive to. And then of course, transportation funding in general. And then issues that I want to try to find some way to throw at you, even if they're not PBOT specific, are, although this one somewhat is, I mean, alcohol tax, you know, either eliminate the preemption or raise the alcohol tax, because that helps us both in the public. That's one issue where simply the fact of the tax, regardless of how we use it, reduces drunk driving and reduces crime. I agree with the mayor that, I mean, I think gun safety should be a primary issue. I wouldn't mind taking another run at property tax reform, even if all the polling shows we're going to lose. I mean, it would be nice if we at least put something before the voters, before the world ends. Another issue, and I'm not sure what bureau would fall under really, is, or maybe it would be PBOT, is adopting stronger regulations on emissions from diesel equipment, because we keep on hearing from citizens who are dealing with toxic air emissions that Oregon is a dumping ground for old, dirty diesel equipment because we're between Washington and California, which have stricter regulations.
That we set up we put the infrastructure bureaus together soon to talk about that, because it has wide-ranging implications, particularly with all the work we do with third parties. And so let's talk about that and what it means and what the intermediate standards might be.
Sounds good. More, and then I'll be done. Another issue that's come to us, a potential city issue, but it's also a potential state issue, is the push by the AFL, the Urban League, and other organizations to prohibit employers from asking on the initial job application about criminal history. You can, once you actually interview people and are prepared to offer the job, you can do criminal background checks, you can ask questions, but the theory, which is actually a proven theory in a number of cities and states now, is that there's a lot of employers who, they ask about your criminal background in the initial application, you check the box, and then they don't look at you at all. Whereas if they actually saw you and met you, then even if they ultimately found out about criminal history, then they might decide that they would hire you anyway. And in Minnesota, they saw the unemployment rate among former offenders going from like 94% to 40% after they adopted this. I mean, when we expect people to come out of prison and become productive members of society, get jobs, et cetera, but then there's a practice that makes it virtually impossible for them to get jobs, that's a serious problem. And we would be something like the 50th city in America to adopt this if we did it citywide, and I think there's a number of states that have done it as well. So I think we might pursue that at city level, but even better if we could do it at the state level. Commissioner Fish, I'm interested in the inclusion of your zoning discussion they've got going on.
Yeah, related issue on the criminal justice side, I just had a chance to spend some time with Mayor Nutter from Philadelphia and got a little more understanding of this program that they have, which might fundamentally be our own or our own with the county if we choose to do it, but could involve the state. And that is incentives for employers to hire recently released felons. They have a tax credit for this. Unbelievable results. About 400 people in the program so far. They've only issued about $90,000 in tax credits because most employers have just gone ahead and hired the person, and they were so great that they didn't even bother to ask for the tax credit. and then get this, a 7% recidivism rate. Seven. I mean, bottle this, you know, export it quickly because it's a really good idea. So it's something we can probably do, but the state could potentially be a partner.
I was in New York City last week, and the New York City passed its $75 billion budget. And there was concern on the council that by only offering healthy meals to needy kids in the schools, we were stigmatizing kids. So they voted to fund providing healthy meals to all kids in the schools. That's what happens when you have $75 billion to spend. Three quick points. One is I will support a supplemental budget request in the fall bump to add an additional person to your staff to deal with Commissioner Novick's request. Number two, at some point, would you give us some insight into what the speaker's priority will be? We learned in the last session that if the speaker has a priority, it's often good to hook your wagon to that priority because there's something only the speaker can do, and that was certainly the case with Section 8 reform. And number three, in addition, I wanted to just raise the question of tax credits for film. I think you're probably going to say we're going to have to play defense on that one. And having read a Wall Street Journal article recently where the person claimed that we're just giving away money through this program without acknowledging that absent the tax credit, you don't actually get the business. So it's a little bit of a misnomer. I would like us to work with the governor and PDC and our local folks to consider an expansion of the program. Dean Devlin was quoted in the Business Journal this week as saying that there were shows he wanted to bring to Oregon, but it just wasn't economical unless we had expanded our cap. But the second thing is, Martha, our program doesn't cover commercials. And apparently there's a huge industry for commercials that would also come to Oregon and Portland if our incentive program also applied to commercials. So I'd like to have that in the mix for consideration.
Well, and thank you for flagging that, Commissioner. I will say on the film and video, and both Dan and I have had quite a bit of experience working on those issues of the state legislature, when the revenue committees sort out the tax credits that produce major economic benefit for the state for those that don't, the film and video tax credit tends to rise to the top. The economic analysis has penciled out in a way for that industry, for Oregon, and I think for the city, in a way that a lot of the other tax credit programs, they just can't quite hit that. So of those, I think there has been a lot of interest in support to see how that program could create more jobs, frankly, in Oregon than it has.
So we would like to round out the list of items here so that we don't skip over anything that we've called out. Mental health, both access to mental health and mental health funding, is something that we anticipate will, again, be on the table and very much part of the conversation in 2015. That has been a priority item in the past for the Senate president in particular. Jurisdictional transfer, which is related to another item here, transportation funding. Commissioner Novick, you mentioned that, and Andy spoke to the interim work group conversations that are going on right now. This is very much a topic of lengthy discussion in terms of fleshing out potential proposal to take to the legislature, like the City of Portland, other local governments, as well as the State of Oregon. All face very significant challenges when it comes to making transportation investments in it and maintaining their existing transportation assets.
Can I ask you something? Does the demise of the CRC give us more opportunities or fewer to look for additional transportation resources in the next biennium?
So I think, first of all, it's too early to tell. And I know that's not a great answer, but I think there are some proponents of that project that are still meeting to talk about whether there is still a viable proposal, even though the project has been officially closed down by the governor. There are also some who think that with the CRC not moving forward, it is going to be very difficult to get the legislature to take a 3/5 revenue vote on a larger transportation package. So depending on where you're sitting in this discussion, I think people think it potentially cuts both ways. I guess I would say I wouldn't be surprised to continue to hear chatter or discussions around a bridge, even though the official position of the Department of Transportation is that it's been closed down. I think there are still discussions happening with the state of Washington officials.
There has also been quite a bit of attention paid to seismic resiliency and preparation for large seismic events. So there was a report that was issued last year by the state and state agencies and partners. The legislature itself is planning to move out of the state capitol temporarily so that they can retrofit the state capitol. There's been discussions about potentially investing more dollars to retrofit schools. And then on the transportation funding side of things, there's been discussion about potentially making investments to keep our transportation networks at least functioning in strategic locations after a major event. Air toxics and clean diesel is a topic that's receiving an increasing amount of attention. Recently, Representative Greenlick and Senator Dumbro hosted a almost all-day workshop on the topic to hear about some of the things that are happening in terms of best practices, as well as beginning to discuss potential options moving forward. And then clean fuels, so low-carbon fuels, the Oregon program is scheduled to sunset at the end of 2015, and we know that it'll be a priority item for a number of folks to reauthorize that program, and that's something that the governor's office is working on as well. So transitioning to potential challenges for 2015, not all of these issues are cut and dry as simply opportunities or challenges. Some are a little of both. And raising revenue is something that touches on both the statewide level as well as the local level. When it comes to things like transportation funding, one of the potential challenges is that there's always a temptation to put in place, is this still working? Yeah. To put in place new preemptions on local revenue raising options. So that's something that we will very much be monitoring as part of the conversation. And then, of course, at the state level, in order to increase or impose revenue increases, that requires a three-fifths majority in both the House and in the Senate. So when we talk about the lay of the land, it's one of the sort of question marks out on the horizon is what the actual composition of the body will look like and what that means for the prospects related to revenue moving forward.
Which just suggests that given the challenges Commissioner Novick is having with the street fee, they don't really need to have a statewide preemption on raising revenue because the citizens themselves are kind of doing that for them. So I would suggest that we, of course, try to stop any more preemptions. Take any.
Martha, just sounds like a dumb question, but and maybe it is, but what constitutes new revenue? Are there circumstances where renewing an existing revenue source is also subject to this supermajority, or does it have to be above and beyond an existing revenue source?
Commissioner, it's not at all a dumb question. In fact, it's a question that has led to mammoth floor fights about whether something is a tax or a fee. Commissioner Novick has probably been a part, maybe more familiar with some of the specifics on that. But if there is a question, legislative counsel issues an opinion, and that tends to be what the body follows. But it isn't as cut and dry when you have expiring. And then there's differences between taxes and tax credits. So it is actually a little bit more of a complicated picture. But we'd be happy to prepare a write-up for counsel on that.
So I'll let Andy speak to a few of these, but do want to mention a couple others. One, franchise fees and right-of-way management. We have been involved in efforts to level the playing field in terms of cities' authority to levy franchise fees for providers of similar services that have different historical roots in a similar fashion. We've also played defense, however, on proposals that would greatly restrict local authority to manage the right-of-way and charge fees for use of the right-of-way or for the privilege of doing business within a city. That is something that we anticipate will be a topic of discussion in the next session as well. And then I mentioned it earlier, local improvement districts. So forming local improvement districts to help finance infrastructure investments for things like sewer, water, transportation is potentially something where we may see proposals that would restrict our ability to implement those districts and finance that kind of infrastructure.
What's the
basis
of that? That caught me by surprise.
So there was a particular case in the city of Kaiser that was a particular property, part of the local improvement district that helped bring about the development of the Kaiser Station area near the freeway, where essentially the combination of the financial situation of the property owners with the Great Recession and what that did for property values, and then the need to make payments toward the LID meant that some property owners felt like they were pinched and in jeopardy of losing their property. And that called into question many aspects of LIDs and what that means in terms of property value ratios as compared to the payment burden, those sorts of things.
Remind you, LIDs are founded in state law already?
They are authorized in state law already, but generally speaking, cities have a fair amount of flexibility in how to define the details when forming a particular LID. It's one of those areas where there's been recognition over time that it's just not a one-size-fits-all sort of solution. You really need to tailor to local circumstances.
And they're authorized in state law for general law counties or for everybody? I mean, we don't need state permission, I wouldn't think, as a non-Dillon rule state, right? Why refresh my memory on how that works. We don't have to have something in state statute that says we can have an LID, even though there is, right?
I'm not going to venture to offer a legal opinion charter authority versus state statute. That would be a question for the city attorney's office. But I do know that state statute provides a framework that authorizes cities and, I believe, counties to form local improvement districts.
Yeah, they can always fence us in, even if we have a charter. I understand that. But, okay. A case went bad in one town, and we enact new state law. We've been to that movie.
We go to that movie every year.
Yeah. It's still not a good movie.
So I'll pick it back up and start with marijuana as a potential challenge in 2015. So just like it could be a potential opportunity in 2015, for the exact same reasons, it's going to be a potential challenge in 2015 with the voters. If they choose to enact recreational marijuana, there's going to be preemptions and a shortage of shared revenues and not probably sufficient local control over recreational licenses, and those will all be challenges for us to address in 2015 and probably into the future after that. On the law enforcement side, in the last session, we dealt with several measures that would have inhibited the ability of law enforcement to conduct investigations. I think that there's a good possibility that some or all of those come back and present potential challenges in the next legislative session. Speaking of, we've seen that movie and go to it every year. The third-party tort liability issue is very much the same. It was at one tragic case in one county, where the workers' comp death benefit was very much insufficient to cover the situation, and the result was a bill that had statewide applicability and extended third-party tort liability to all public bodies. So I think that there's a very good chance that that issue comes back because it didn't get finished in the 2014 legislative session, and we'll have to play defense on that one also. And then on tax abatements, there is interest in the legislature at taking a systematic look at local tax abatements for foregone revenue, much in the same way that the state takes a systematic approach to reviewing state tax credits when they come up for renewal. We obviously use many of those local tax abatements as an incentive, perhaps on the affordable housing side and in other areas, and those haven't received the direct scrutiny in a systematic way from the legislature, and they may start to receive that in 2015 or into the future. And so with that, I'll turn it over to Martha.
So, I mean, I think that hopefully gives you a sense of what we know now. I fully expect in the coming months, we're going to continue to do outreach to legislators in Portland and in other parts of the state and continue having conversations as they determine what some of their priorities or issues are. At the same time, we'll be getting working with council and bureaus on honing in some of these issues so that when we come back with an agenda, we'll have pretty thoroughly vetted some of these issues and then bring them back to you to really prioritize what are the things at the top of the list. So happy to answer any additional questions or take any other comments.
So particularly, you want us to be lofting new issues onto this list as we see them, right? Not just today, but today and soon, given the schedule that you went over.
That's right. So anything that is going to be that you want to have considered as either a priority or a bill where the city of Portland is going to advance, we absolutely need to start on that now because of the legislative timelines and because we're going to have to, each of these issues also require coalition building and connecting with other partners and stakeholders, and we want to make sure we give ourselves time to do that and to give those issues the best chances possible moving forward.
So Parks has an issue, which I know you're aware of. I want to make sure my colleagues are, and that's a request for an appropriation for a project called Repair Forest Park. It's something that Representative Mitch Greenlick has been very interested in for several sessions, and we think we have a proposal which we'll work on with him to both repair, restore, and enhance Forest Park.
Great.
Well, I know I've spoken with you, Martha, but I don't know if I've spoken to my colleagues about it, but I do have an interest in taking the children's levy and turning it into a children's services district, which would probably be countywide and would require legislative approval, or amending the ORS to make a children's service district a permissible special service district. Mm-hmm. So that is something I'm interested in advancing in this next session. And
why would we not ask for the children's levy services to be provided statewide?
Only because I don't have a personal ambition in trying to do something like that statewide. I think it's more achievable at a county, Multnomah County, than it is on a statewide basis. I'm not open to it, but I'm just trying to scale my ambitions to what I think are achievable.
Speaking of the county, I wanted to air the question of how useful council thinks it would be to have one of the next stages of our process be a joint one with Multnomah County. Not that we have to have a completely lockstep agenda between the two local governments, but what are your thoughts about that? Okay. Yeah, I think there's interest at the county as well. It doesn't mean we have to have a completely mirror image legislative agenda, but to the greatest extent possible, if we're coordinated, then we have more clout.
I'm happy to start working on that. Do you envision that to be a home game or an away game?
Whatever. We'll do it in the middle of the Hawthorne Bridge.
Yeah. Okay, great. Perfect.
As Commissioner Novick had suggested, that's where we ought to meet with them on a nice day. So, it sounds like it's something that Chair Kefouri is interested in, and I think given particular issues like mental health and healthcare reform and some of the other stuff on this list, transportation funding, they've got a stake in each of those questions. So happy to go to their house.
Commissioner Fritz, I was just reminded of something that somebody told me about like 2 years ago, and I don't think that this is something the legislature actually gets directly involved in now. I think it's some sort of committee, but the legislature could. What I was told by some parks advocates is that when they divide up the lottery money for parks and watersheds, they don't give cities very much money at all. It pretty much all goes to the state parks. And the state parks, I mean, they're great parks, but they probably don't serve as many people as the city and county parks. So that strikes me as, I mean, something, I don't know if we've ever sounded out the League of Cities on that, whether we should ask the legislature to direct the relevant agencies to start giving urban parks more of the funds.
Can I just comment on that for a sec? A couple of years ago, Steve, there was a statewide ballot initiative that changed the allocation of some of that money. And the person tasked with overseeing in the legislature the rulemaking with a particular focus on correcting the inequity in the distribution was Senator Jackie Dingfelder.
So other next steps and follow-up for us? Keep getting back to you with ideas and concepts.
Yeah, that's right. So we're happy to work with your staffs and also with your bureaus. And we've sent out a reminder to bureaus that these top line items need to be to us by next week. And they all require, before they submit them to us, they need to get approval of their commissioner in charge before they come to our office. And then we'll also be launching our public engagement process. We'll be collecting ideas to the public, and then we'll be working with you all over the next few months to sort of culling and vetting the things that are the most ripe to bring forward in the next session. And we'll come back to you and schedule a work session, again, looking at sort of November, December. And then the new piece will be working with Multnomah County to find a time to get together with them and have this conversation as well.
Earlier, obviously, and the better process better for that, just so that we do form our agendas together rather than just check our work against each other.
Okay, great.
Could you refresh our memories? What is the public engagement process for our legislative agenda?
Well, there have been, we've tried a few different things. And this year we're going to, our objective is actually to reach more people than we have in the past. We have had listening sessions where people need to come down to the city at night. I think we've had some success with that. Last year we tried to open it up to emails, people don't have to leave their house, and phone and others. This year we're going to try something new, working with ONI, where we're going to do, we're going to have an online platform that allows more people to weigh in and get the word out and give people longer to respond. And then we're also going to have opportunities for people who don't have access to computers to weigh in. The online platform allows us to translate things into many different languages. In addition to that, we'll continue this Advocacy 101 training session where we bring in members of our legislative delegation and help community members who really want to understand better how the legislative process works. We bring our experts and we bring in experts in the community to help train them. What we like to tell community members is it's one thing to have the city advocate for the issue. It's another for you to learn how to navigate these political processes, which in Oregon are very open, and legislators are very receptive to hearing from their constituents. So I think we have a twofold approach there.
I very much encourage you to have a couple of in-person opportunities to discuss, mm-hmm. because the challenge with either the online or the send us your input mm-hmm. on paper, if I'm doing that, I'm not going to read everybody else's input. I'm just going to put my stuff in. I'm going home. Mm-hmm. I'm going on about mm-hmm. my business. What we found when we had the two sessions mm-hmm. is that the advocates listened to each other and mm-hmm. they got to know each other. And so a lot more people, for example, got to understand about the film tax credit, mm-hmm. which was fairly obscure. And most people said, why is the government wasting our money with this? Mm-hmm. And then once the advocates for that, you know, because you do tend to get the most active people showing mm-hmm. up at these things because mm-hmm. they want to get their stuff on. So please consider holding a couple, at least one, if not two, community events, and they don't have to be downtown. Mm-hmm. I think that that's it, because it's not only about us getting the public's input, it's about the public and the communities hearing each other's input and wanting to work with each other to get to support each other. Kind of the concept of the Coalition for a Livable Future mm-hmm. was that the affordable housing advocates started advocating for the environmentalists and vice versa. And it builds community. So please do that.
Well, I appreciate that comment, Commissioner. And I think we've tried to figure out, working with ONI, who we consider to be the community engagement experts, how can we, as a very small office, how can we provide the greatest benefit for the community? And so I think your point about having the community themselves be in a place where they can engage and dialogue about issues and seeing whether we can create a process that allows for that to happen, I think is a really good one. So thank you for that comment.
you know, we're getting pretty good turnout at street fee forums. So maybe we could just ask at the end, hey, by the way, what do you think our legislative agenda should be?
To this process. Again, ideas need to be put on the table soon. Let's schedule our work session with the county probably for early fall, and then see how the elections work out.
Thank you very much.